Access number 11750, reel 5.
Mr. Fred Lenico, reel 5. We were talking about the voyage out and the Duchess of Richmond. Do you remember the call in at Durban?
Yes, we called it in Durban round about June, I think it was. Sometime in June. And we stayed there about 3 days, where we was allowed some time off, and we were straight very hospitable there, because the local people seemed to sort of have a roster where they met these troop ships in, and they were only too pleased to make them feel at home, and either take them to their homes or visit various places of interest. Myself, I was invited to a home, a little family, which I'm sorry to say I can't remember the names now, but I was introduced to all the family. I can see it now, and it was just like going into my own home, although it was so many thousand miles away. But the treatment there was excellent. Unfortunately, I was only allowed ashore once, but that was just unlucky. That's how things happened. After that, of course, we remained on board and just doing the ordinary jobs.
You then went round to Aden.
From there, that's right, up the east coast. Oh, there was a little incident with the Exeter, and I saw that happen. The Exeter, where they have those sort of tiny seaplanes that's fixed on a crane attachment, swings out, then it's dropped on the water, takes off, and does his whatever, comes back and hoisted on again. But unfortunately, this particular time, it just plummeted, just dropped clean as a whistle right in the sea, and both of them gone, of course, the plane and all. That was off the Exeter, and after that it seemed to just, we never saw it anymore, you see. But reading about it on these convoys, after they got out of a, like even when we were going to Freetown, it seemed ages. It doesn't seem as long distance looking at a map, but it seemed ages before you was getting there. And of course, I think they took you practically to the Canadian coast and came back again. You're sort of in a safe zone. You was only escorted so far and then left on your own devices. I think this what happened when we left the Exeter. We were in a safety zone, because at Aden, there was only the Red Sea and the ship canal, Suez Canal. Didn't get off at Aden. It was just like Freetown. He was on board and it stopped there, whatever. I don't even remember what for there, whether it was, I don't think it would be for fueling or what, because we'd only a short distance up into the Suez then. And then we carried on from there up the Red Sea and into Suez, and we anchored, and it was a place called Port Chufik. The Georgic was there. That was another troop ship that was there. I think another one called the Alcantara. I can't say day to day what happened there, but I know eventually we was taken ashore.
Did you have any responsibilities about unloading, or was it the same as before?
Same as before.
Crated
you
up.
See, they never see. You just had your bare necessities, because we wasn't being in one place long enough to sort of be organised. It was more of a, you're in transit all the time up to that point after leaving England, you see.
So as it was in transit, it wasn't your responsibility.
No, I didn't accept. I was just treated. I was actually in D Company as an ordinary squaddy, you know. Then
I believe you went to El Qassim or Qassim.
Qassassin Camp, fly-blown place. on the canvas there. What you expect there, you get your sandstorms and everything's going in the jam and the butter and the flat blue bottles, loads of blue bottles descending on you, what have you.
That was your first experience.
Of desert.
And yes. How did you take? I mean, what?
Not very, well. I mean, as I've just mentioned, it wasn't sort of an enticing place to be when you were sweating cobs and you was fly ridden and the heat. It was something, of course, we weren't used to, because that wasn't our climate, was it?
What about the Egyptians? It was the first time you'd come across them. How did you get on with them?
Well, in Kwasasan camp, you only saw those that were coming around flogging stuff, you know, the vendors and that. We didn't go into the town or what have you to mix or doing like that. We stayed in the camp purely. There was even a cinema there, Shaftel's cinema, open air cinema, run by a wog type, you know, like the old fashioned in the old 20s when they had the reels. It'd break down, you know, they'd put one reel on and everything went silent and the lights went up and they'd all be banging and clattering and like we used to do as kids, you know. And then he'd have the second reel in and so on, and they was all black and white rubbishy films. And that was the entertainment. I can't even remember a naffy there, really. We got you could get your cans of beer. Where they appeared from, I don't know. And there was Aussie, South African beers.
Did you unpack there, or were you still in transit?
In transit, virtually, under canvas and waiting where we're going next. You see, I can't even remember any strict training. They had your bits of PT in the morning before the sun was up and all that, but there was nothing like being in training sessions or nothing like that. It seemed as if when we was there, well, you had all your gear ready to move somewhere.
So what happened?
You were on the chessboard again, you see. Well, from there we went to Cyprus. I think went up to Portshead, Alex, one of the ports. And I myself was hustled onto a destroyer, the Jaguar, it was called, HMS Jaguar. It drew up at the quayside, just like a taxi, hailing a taxi at the curb. Marvellous. And piled us lot on this, like sardines, as many as they could get on. And after a few hours, we landed at Famagusta.
Now, was there anything unusual about the way the Navy unloaded the stores at Famagusta? Did you notice anything?
Not really to recollect, to be honest.
Did they lose any of them that you were aware of?
I'm not aware they lost anything. They may have done, I don't know.
So what happened when you
landed?
You
can only answer here honestly, you know. Well, from Famagusta, we were split up, actually. There was some companies more into Nicosia who we used to be very envious of, because there was plonk right where the action, not, I don't mean action as regards warfare, I'm talking about where the entertainment was, you know, in the Nicosia town. We was on the airfield. It wasn't an airfield like Heathrow or something like that. We were just one mass of hard granite-like stone on the canvas again. And of course, it was very hard. We had to dig. What's it out? Dig defensive pits out. Ren gun and all that.
Wasn't that a bit difficult, didn't it?
Oh, what? Eh? It's just like having a nail and hammer and trying to get through a lump of granite. Terrible.
How did
they got the engineers, I think, at the finish, these bright boys with the pneumatic drills and what have you to help us out on that. And then that was a series of just... the reason we went to Cyprus was that he'd done a bit of island hopping at Jerry, you see. He'd done Cars and Crete and all these performances, and they said, all right, he's going to be after Cyprus now. So they put our happy band there to try and stop him, you see. We did get a few raids. Bombing raids there.
Now, the bombing raids, I mean, that was your first time under
fire. First time I'd ever seen an enemy shell or bomb or what have you explode.
And how did it affect you?
Very unnerving, I can tell you. Yes, very unnerving. And
did any land close to you?
Well, not close enough to do any damage, but... Even so, when it was quite a distance off, you felt that it had your name on it, sort of, and it could have been miles, it could have been 100 yards away, you see. And even when you saw him up there doing his diving, you thought he could only see you, you know.
What did you do?
down, very smartly, yeah. But then we had little exercises on there. The usual thing, training exercises. I'll never forget his name, Jack Lobley, we lost on there in one of them.
Oh.
Jack Lobley. Tall lad like you. He wasn't the first casualty that had happened since they joined the army. We lost one in England, I remembered his name. He was with Clark, he was his driver. We've talked about Clark. And Splebbins or something like that, he would call. But this lad, Lobby, a nice lad. And you couldn't believe you'd lost somebody.
How did it happen?
It was on an exercise, and that was another little thing we had, I forgot to mention. Another weapon, a mortar platoon. Like a tin funnel, and you drop some mortar in, and that was it. Anyway, he must have found a bad one. Killed him.
Do you remember the accident?
I never saw it. I mean, I never saw it happen, nothing like that, but it was...
What about the other accident when Wood was killed and Sergeant Self wounded?
I didn't see it happen. He was with them, you see. It was the mortar... I think it was the mortar platoon he formed.
That was a separate accident, the one with Self and Wood.
Was it? I can't recall it, but Lobley I do, because he was a private like myself, you see.
What were these exercises like that you did? Do you remember what you did? Or were you helping with the rations mainly?
I was with the rations mainly, with our Jackie, Colour Sergeant Jackie Hudson. As I say, I was fortunate there because I wasn't umping a rifle and stuff like that. I was going around on a 1500 weight with the food and the... yeah.
What about... Where was your dump, so to speak, your stores? Where were they stored at the airport or airfield?
We had them in these, what they dug out for us, the engineers and that, you know, in the pits.
Was it actually underground, or was it just...
It was just a huge hole with camouflage netting over and so on.
And would you keep the stores... outside, or would they be just in a parked three-tonner under in the hole, or would you actually unload them?
As far as I remember, there was unloaded. As far as I remember, there was unloaded. It was a vague place to me. Cyprus. You see, when you think of the space we travelled in that time, it was you couldn't get your scattered wits together to sort of think, well, this is happening now, and we're doing this, and we're doing that. But time you got around, because as I said, we weren't soldiers when all said and done. But it's time you got round and said, oh, well, we're here and we're doing this and the other. It was, embark, we're off.
What about recreation while you were there?
Recreation, we were taken down in a three-tonner, so many at a time, down into Nicosia, where the Kit Kat Club was. That was one of the venues. And then there was a little street with a Catholic church at the end of it. And from then on, it was just brothels. And before you went down, you went into the MO's tent and got tidied up before you went. And you had to call at the MO's tent when you came back to get tidied up again. You see, VD inspection, as you know. What else did we do?
Did you drink much while you were down there? Because drink would be cheaper. You perhaps
drink was cheaper, but of course, and another thing that well, this is far away from drink, obviously, just things that crop up in my mind. The little boys used to come round with a huge basket, and he'd be shouting, "Stafelis, grapes, yes." You could buy these for next to nothing grapes. But I say they weren't potent, was they? But the wine, that's what's reminding me of the drink. You could get wine like buying cold water, you know. Because we wasn't wine drinkers again, was we? We've been introduced to all this. And then another thing that they even did in those days, which you now see, which is, over the last few years has only started to operate in our own bars in England, and that is, on the counter, was a type of potato crisp or a nut or something. You've seen little balls on the bars in England. They was doing it then. You could have a feed.
Did you get drunk at all while you were? I mean, you know, with the stronger drinks, it's a lot stronger.
Not to the extent. I wouldn't say paralytic, but you could get quite happy and refreshed, you know. But nothing to go mad about. Not like the old cider days where you just stood up and fell over completely, you know.
Anything else you remember about Cyprus?
Yes, I caught sandfly fever. And of course, they had what they call a rest camp at the top of Mount Trudis. And Mount Trudis, I can remember being taken up there in my khaki shorts and shirt. And when I got off at the top, I had an overcoat on, scarf, woolly hat and everything. It was completely into an English climate, cold, snowy, just like the Alps. Beautiful up there. In fact, it's a resort now, you know, true, just for Cyprus. And I had about 10 days up there.
How bad were your symptoms from sandfly fever?
Sort of a... Well, I must say the word feverish, weak, like you have the flu, shall we say, a flu.
And did they do anything to treat it, other than just put you up?
As far as I can remember, I got some tablets, and then I suppose the treatment is to get out of the hot climate, isn't it? That's maybe why they sent you up there. So I had a spell up there. as I say, maybe about 10 days, I should say, week 10 days, and came back. And then they're on the road again, aren't they?
That's in November, when they moved over to Palestine.
Yes, and we went again on the taxi service, the destroyer I did, called the Eesti. I think both of them ships were lost after, you know. The Eesti. And we sailed and docked at Haifa, Palestine. And one of the vivid things I can remember seeing in Haifa, Palestine, was truckloads of Jaffa oranges. Huge ones.
Now, at Haifa, there was a bit of an equipment change round with an Indian division. Do you remember that?
All I can remember about anything looking Indian, which we'd never looked, well, which we hadn't seen with our own army, what they call it, was the transport, Indian transport, the type of three tonner. Wasn't an English manufacturer one.
And you took over their three tonners.
And some of the huge tents they had.
What state were the three tonners in?
Good God. There was, they gave them some stick. You know how our lads used to keep them sort of on top of the... A used car, what they call it. Plot. But their appearance didn't sort of entice you at all, because they looked at a chock-a-block full of sand and what have you. You know, if there was so much sand on the outside, God knows what had got in. They wasn't clean at all.
So again, you had your stores in the back of one of these three tonners. Would it just be one three tonner for the company?
No.
For the stores?
No. Well, for the company, I'm sorry, mind's going to a battalion. Well, you get them in a three tonner and a 1500 weight and what have you.
Just one of them?
You'd get them in that, just for a company. Spares, everything else are carried on the back, you know, weren't they?
So, what do you remember about the journey from Palestine through to Iraq? And were there any preparations, you recall, for the vehicles? For desert travel?
No, unless they tidied them up, these vehicles, because, as I say, they didn't look very reliable at all. They didn't look one bit reliable, and I couldn't imagine them wanting a tattle. Of course, then again, I didn't know how far we were going. These saying, "Oh, we're going up here. We must be going there." It's not put up on the daily orders and said, "You are now proceeding to Kirkuk." I mean, we didn't know the hell we were going. You see, we might have only gone a 2 hours ride. Nobody told you anything. You was just blind. The blind leading the blind. You see.
So what do you remember about the journey? Because it was a very long journey.
At the end of it, we knew it had been a long journey, you see, but we didn't know how long when we started it. Well, we went through Jordan, and I remember Abania very well. Abania, he was very good there. He'd let us stop off and have a bath and use the facilities for a couple of hours or so. That's all I got, anyway. And it was tents all the way. Breakdowns as we expected, and thieves, rifle thieves. God, that was a performance. We used to sleep with our feet towards the centre pole, you know.
In the tent.
Yeah, nearly had your rifle tied to you. And it creepy crawlies under the flat there, and he'd wake up one morning and he'd no rifle. God.
Now, you had a store of rifles, didn't you? I mean, that was one of the things you had in your stores.
Yes.
How many
would you... But, as I say, on this transit lap, me and Jackie never had, never seemed to be with them. This lot was going with all the battalion stuff. Up. Until we settled in the desert and from leaving England, all I seemed to be was part and parcel of D Company as a squaddy and helping Jack out with the rations and I'm trying to get out of any parades to us.
So if you lost your rifle, it wasn't replaced then, you'd just have to go without it for a while.
Well, I never lost mine, but I know people that did lose them. I don't know where the hell they come from to the replenishment. Never from me. And then...
How did you get on with the local Iraqis, you know, and going through Baghdad and such?
Well, we didn't stop in Baghdad. We crept through there.
What do you mean, crept through?
Well, it didn't start waving, you know. There was unrest, and it was the Iraqis that was rifle-whipping. In fact, we have the same feeling about the Iraqis, which it was given to us, again by rumour. The like the IRA, these lot, you see, they're anti-this and anti-that, anti-British and God knows what not. So not making a sort of a parade, you know, with the band and all that going through, bugger off, sharpish through here, you see. But the villages were used to make, eggs and chips. That's all they knew how to cook, I think. Boiled eggs or fried eggs and chips. They'd sell you all that sort of stuff, loads of that.
Did you see any signs of the Iraqis being unfriendly? I mean, you were told they were, but were
they? Yeah, well, this is it. You told they are. So you keep, as we say now, another new phrase, a low profile.
But did you notice any unrest?
The only thing, as I say, I noticed was this here rifle pinching. And I could there must be something in it, mustn't it? And then again... As you know, they are light-fingered, aren't they, the nomadic type, as they was.
So what after Baghdad, what do you remember, as the journey went further? And
then we got into worse what's it then, don't we? We have to get on marching then. Yes, we have a march. Oh, yes. That's when that 12 miler in Honiton came to pass. We were doing that every day for quite a few days. What an endless!
Was that the march from Kirkuk up to Eskikelig?
Eskikelig, yeah. Day after day. Wonder where the hell he was going. The roads were terrible. And all of a sudden, we camp, and all the gear's there.
Did you suffer during that march, your feet?
Personally, no. The only time I ever had blisters was the first one I did, and that was in Honiton. And after that, no. I was lucky.
Do you think it toughened you up?
What a day after day, 12, 14 miles. And then he says, this is it, and you can see nowhere where there's a camp. Where are you going to camp? Then another do next day. Blokes brought out of warehouses and everyday job in England doing that.
So you arrived and the camp was all waiting for you?
Well... The semblance of a camp was there.
And what was it? Was it tents or huts?
Tents.
And they were already set up for you?